Good morning. On a Sunday morning at Parkview, how many of you talk to at least one person outside of your peer group? Do you know the names of the children who come up for children's time? Do you feel intimidated by those with white hair, or perhaps those that are in high school? Are you uncomfortable talking with people because some people just, you don't really understand their stage of life? According to the authors of Growing Young, quote, "When we bridge generation gaps, everyone grows young." Cross-generational discipleship is beneficial not only for young people, but also for older generations who need the vitality of the young to inspire their faith just as much as the young need wise elders to ground theirs. Faith, after all, is not just passed down, it's passed around, end quote. If intergenerational relationships will inspire mature faith in our young people, and those of mature faith will benefit from the energy of the young, what are we doing here to facilitate these relationships? Here are some examples I've observed as being strengths of intergenerational relationships at Parkview. The mentor-mentee program has recently been revitalized. Middle schoolers have the option to identify adults who they'd like to be their mentor, and facilitators make these matches happen. These pairings provide opportunities for one-on-one relationship building where interaction can focus on the interests of either person. This means that cooking together, going on a hike, creating art, visiting each other's homes, attending a soccer game, or chatting about a faith question over ice cream provide structure for intergenerational discipleship. Secondly, Shine Time coordinators have put significant effort into reaching out to a variety of individuals to support the programming as shepherds, activity leaders, snack providers, and Bible storytellers. Although at times brief, these commitments allow for participation by all in the joyful learning and play of our youngest members as they begin to build community within our church. An area I've seen growth in over the past few years is with our roundtable discussions. During these conversations, middle schoolers and older are invited to share their thoughts and feelings. We are invited to listen to one another. We get a pulse on the differences of opinions held within our community. I hope we will continue to pursue the voices of our young people, showing that we value their contributions beyond checking off that they got to speak once. What else can we do to further facilitate intergenerational relationships at Parkview? If you feel out of your comfort zone, volunteering with Shine Time, being a mentor, or engaging young people in roundtable discussions, would you be willing to perhaps adopt an individual, a couple, or a family? Could your skills that you've already honed as an aunt, an uncle, or a grandparent be put to use to build intergenerational relationships within our community? At the very least, this looks like checking in with each other on a Sunday morning, or perhaps it means sharing meals occasionally, or attending events together. Or, if you'd like to get to know the middle and high schoolers of our church, could you give an hour or two a few times a year to host? This would require very little of you, as we'd come with activities prepared and simply ask you to be present with our youth and share of yourself. Share your stories with us. Show us pictures of people who are important to you. Ask about what inspires our youth. I am thankful for the role intergenerational relationships have played in my faith formation and well-being, and I look forward to seeing how Parkview nurtures these relationships in the future.
The book Growing Young is to help us make for a forever impact on the younger generation, as well as influencing the older generation to think and act younger. We as older persons are still able to build relationships with them, participate in projects along with them, encourage them, help and support and model for them. I identify closely with chapter 5 in this book entitled Fuel a Warm Community. The opening paragraph in this chapter reads as follows. I love my church. I think it's amazing. Everyone knows everyone and cares about them. It's not like it's compartmentalized by gender or age or different types of persons. It's just like a big family. And it's not the preaching, the music, or the worship style that completely determines what the church is like. It's the way we interact with each other, our shared life. The interpersonal and intergenerational relationships are good and need to continue. The acceptance, the care, the welcoming, the authenticity, the interaction between Sundays is what makes it great. In this type of environment, more serious conversations, such as Bible study, a sense of belonging can take place. An exploration of faith can and does occur. Good relationships can and do lead to staying power. This kind of ministry reflects the parable of the body very well. Many parts, all working together to do meaningful things. Here at Parkview, we do work together well. We worship together. We learn together intergenerationally. But I think we could probably do it a little better. These interactions among and between persons are referred to in scriptures, and I call it the one another list. And here are a few of them. Love one another. Forgive one another. Encourage one another. Be devoted or committed to one another. Live in peace with one another. Warmly welcome one another. Be patient with one another. Serve one another. Consider others better than yourself. My experience of growing young was well introduced to me by the rearing of three boys. The home is a place where the church is modeled, not just at the church. That required a bit of rethinking and behavior modification for me, and I hope that I hope for them as well. One illustration was that when the oldest was the first year in college, and the second a junior or senior in high school, and the third was early middle school, we belonged to an organization called Mennonite Your Way at the time, where persons could call and arrange to come to your house, spend the night, and be served breakfast in the morning while traveling. We lived not far off I-81 in the New River Valley in the city of Radford, and we had a lot of people stopping by, and we enjoyed doing that. We met a lot of new people. Some really needed it. The boys were kind of partners in that because they did live there. They were part of the family, and they were observers and learners. One summer, Louise and I decided to take a trip out west, and the boys decided to stay at home. We told them we'd call them every day, which we did. Well, while we were gone, someone called to come as a Mennonite Your Way guest. Guess what? The boys thought they were familiar enough with these calls and activity, they agreed to entertain these people for the night. As far as we knew, it worked out okay. Later, one of our friends told us that she stopped by the house to see Louise and didn't know that we were gone. And she said, the kitchen was kind of a mess. Obviously not like Louise would have kept it. We wondered how things really went when the guests were here. So we asked them about it again, and they said, well, we cleaned up where the people could see it and probably served cold cereal for breakfast, and it really all worked out okay. As I reflected on that, I think that was an example of the process of growing young. We lived together as a family. They were part of our family life. The Mennonite Your Way ministry was part of our family life. And I think they learned some things we didn't even know they learned. But they observed, they learned these things, and they observed them, and they did them, or chose to do them, when the need arose. This was a reminder to me that kids and older people can grow young at home. The way of doing things works, but I had to look back. I would not probably have chosen to put them in charge of something like that, but they grew up in a home where community work occurred and they helped to do it. So, as adults, I'm thankful to say that these guys have chosen to be involved in service and community professions for which Louise and I are grateful.
As a parent of young children, a preteen, and two teenagers, I have often referred to the African proverb, "It takes a village to raise a child." I see how even small interactions that adults in the church and community have with my children that make an impact, especially if they see an adult consistently making an effort to connect. I have learned over and over that kids have a strong radar for people who genuinely care about them, regardless of how skilled they can feel in how they relate to young people. And as a parent, while I want my kids to continue to come to me, and I hope to help them in their faith formation, I see how very important it is for them to have a network of older people to walk with them and care about them, especially as they mature. One part of the book, Growing Young, says, as young people are choosing a church, warm community is often a stronger draw than belief. When asked what keeps people involved in their church, the highest response was personal relationships and warmth. First relationships, then formation. First belonging, then belief. One model that the book points to is to establish 5 adults for every young person, instead of the opposite that we often see or feel for our Sunday school classes, 1 adult for 5 children, to say 5 adults for every young person, people who will simply check in with them, pray for them, show up at sports games, or be a mentor. Think how our young people would feel about church if this model was even loosely adapted. I thought about Quinn up here and thinking about the 5 adults that could right now choose to be a part of her life and pray for her and check in with her. If everyone who is listening right now would make a commitment to check in with a young person in our church every couple of weeks, think how many young people would feel that belonging and the long-lasting impact that could make. As mentor coordinator, as Peyton referred to, I have been in awe during the last couple of years at the responses of both young people and older people during the mentor matching process. Young people are asked to write down 3 names of possible mentors, and I contact them based on their choices. I have been surprised that there is such a variety of names given. And I am encouraged that the answer I get when asked if someone wants to be a mentor is so often yes. There is not one certain type of adult or a cool factor that our kids are looking for, though that's not to say that many of you mentors are not cool. Young people are looking for authentic connection, and that can take a variety of forms. They are looking for people who will meet them where they are at, both in the physical sense, showing up for them outside of the church building, but also in the emotional sense. Come as you are needs to be the message that we give to our youth as they journey with us in making sense of their beliefs and values. This kind of journeying with our young people may result in more conversations and less conclusions. It may be uncomfortable, it may be messy, but it can be real, and it can serve to draw our young people in instead of pushing them away. Take the story from Luke that was read earlier. Think about 12-year-old Jesus staying in a town without his parents around. Who took care of him? We can assume that the faith community put him up for the night. feeding him during those days that he was away from his family. And as a parent of a 12-year-old boy, I can say he probably ate a lot. He was welcomed to their table 2,000 years ago in the same way that churches today who want to grow young need to welcome and embrace our adolescents and young emerging adults.
One of the chapters we studied is called Be the Best Neighbor. And it's a sign of a church that's growing young is a church that knows how to be a neighbor. And one of the quotes that I like, which I'm going to tinker with the quote a little bit, is it says, churches that grow young neighbor well. Okay, as an English teacher, I don't like that sentence very well. You take neighbor and make a verb out of it. I mean, okay, so churches that grow young neighbor well. They know how to relate to the surrounding community. So that's number one. Number two, they honor what's good in the culture. Number three, they make the world better through service, through activism and peace and justice. And lastly, they respect the journey as much as the destination. Service projects, for example, the act of going and being together and doing something is part of the value of it, in addition to what you actually accomplish and what kind of service you perform. The researchers who wrote the book they asked growing young churches, churches that we consider to be successful at that, they asked them, what accounts for your success in engaging young people? And nearly one in three pointed to a church. They said, our church is inclusive and open and has an open attitude towards other people and the overall culture. One pastor said, we definitely try to stay connected to culture. Philosophically, we don't fear culture or treat it like the enemy. Researchers also found that when growing young churches were asked what made their church effective with young people, nearly 60% said service practices, or generally just being outward oriented. Now, this isn't part of my assignment for this morning, but we just have to acknowledge that we are very fortunate to have Mariah on our pastoral staff. And she's already doing a lot of the stuff that the book talks about through the youth group, service projects, kids club, involving young people in the worship services. But our challenge for all of us here today, for all of us in our church, is to get involved ourselves, and not just leaving it to Mariah, but for all of us to get involved in growing young.